Hello, and thank you for listening to the podcast of the Vineyard Church Maryville here in Maryville, Tennessee. If you haven't already, you can visit our website to find out more information about our church or to find our full audio archive with all of our messages. So you can find all of that at www.vineyardchurch.us, or you can also subscribe on Apple and Google Podcasts. Now, let's hear this week's message.
Hello and good morning to folks who are joining us online. Really glad to have you here as well. I am joined by Josh Armstrong up here, the one and only. There he is. Josh is our missions pastor here and is doing incredible work all around the world. I'm really excited for you guys to get an update from him here in just a minute. But first, I want to direct your attention to the must-have gifts card that was placed on your seat. I would like to draw, I would like to distinguish this from the Advent calendar that is in your chair back. These are companion pieces, okay? The Advent calendar has been specially designed for your fridge, so if you haven't taken one of those home with you, you by all means should. They're free and everything. And also, this companion piece is specially designed for your refrigerator. We're going to take a few minutes here this morning, Josh and I, to tell you about what we have queued up for must-have gifts this year. Maybe before we do, though, Josh, the Beautifully Made Market kicked off this weekend. Can you tell us how that went so far?
Yeah, I will. First, do you feel like we're sitting too close, or is this just right? Are we good?
Yeah, I'll fix it.
That's
we go. That feels right.
Okay. Well, it's going to be a long service. Yeah, I was going to talk about that later, but I'll go ahead.
Okay, thanks.
No, yeah, man, thanks. I know a ton of you guys came out yesterday, which was the opening day of the market. It was awesome. It was packed. It was like semi-COVID-less, I don't know, compared to last year. And so not COVID-less, that's not a good way of saying it, but it felt a little more normal. We've got it the next 2 weeks as well. And I'll talk a little bit more about that when I give a brief missions update in a few minutes. But would love for you guys to come next Friday and Saturday. Both of those days are 10 to 4 at the upstairs in Vienna Coffee House in downtown Maryville. And then that subsequent weekend as well.
Yeah, it's off to a slamming start. And there's more stuff than ever this year. It seemed by a lot. So things are off to a great start here. Each year we do something called must-have gifts. And this is really important thing that we do in the life of our church. Over the course of the years, we have given away hundreds of thousands of dollars that you and others have donated toward goals that we set each year. The premise behind it is really simple. If you've been around, you've heard it again and again, but it's a really simple idea. Each year, it never seems to fail. You go online or you go to your mailbox and you'll find lists of this year's must-have gifts, the things that you simply must have this calendar year. And I actually was going through an enormous pile of Black Friday junk mail that came to my house, and I sure enough found a little leaflet in there that said must-have gifts for 2021, and there was a list of seemingly frivolous things on there. One thing that stood out to me is that there were candles were on that list, and I thought that's a big upgrade for candles to be on the must-have gifts list for 2021. It's, you know, it's on there with like Killer Tech and Sweet Boots, but then here you have like candles just sitting there, and I thought that's a strange, but that kind of actually sort of made the point for me, which is this: there was a time at which candles would be a genuine must-have gift. If it was a time before we had like electricity and the light bulb and say little Susie needed medical care after hours, well, we need candles so that we have light by which to do that. That's a must-have gift, okay? Not candles like, I mean, look, no judgment here. I hope your whole house smells like Bath and Body Works. I hope you have lots of candles. But they're not must-haves. Must-haves are things like food and water and shelter and clothing and education and access to reasonable means to survive and thrive in this world. And we tend to lose sight of that sometimes in the midst of all of the Advent, Christmas hustle and bustle and the sprint to get the best gear and the killer swag and all the best gifts. And so what we do as a church each year is we push back against that and say, by all means, let's share gifts, let's be generous with one another, that's beautiful, but let's, just to make sure we don't lose the plot and to make sure we help some people along the way, let's raise some money and provide some real must-have gifts, things that people genuinely must have. The verse I always think about connected to this is Titus 3, verse 14, says, let our people learn to devote themselves to good works so as to help in cases of urgent need and not be unfruitful. So what are we doing here? We're committing ourselves to good works to help people in urgent need. And the goal in that, and we've been talking a lot about how we just want to be fruitful more than anything else these last few weeks. We've been talking about that. The goal is so that we cannot be unfruitful, but be fruitful. So this year, as if you'll direct your attention to the cards now, I think I directed your attention there earlier and then I spoke for several minutes, but now we can actually look at it together. There are three gifts that we're focusing on this year, each of which we're just really, really excited about. You know, our senior leadership team and planning and praying through this, we said we really felt the Lord directing us. You'll notice as you get to the dollar figures, these are our most aggressive goals that we have set. But we really have faith for these things. We think these are specific things that the Lord is leading us to do. The first on the list is the clinic in, I started to say Laborde, but it's not in Laborde. It's a Ferrette Depend, sorry. That is run by the Abercrombies. And each year we look to raise money and it provides a significant boost for them. Josh knows way more about what's happening with the Abercrombies. Why don't you tell us what they're up to down there?
Yeah, lots going on with the Abercrombies right now, especially with all that's happening in Haiti. And we'll go into too much detail because they're trying to figure out some stuff themselves. But as far as their ministry and what's happening in Ferrette Depend, and Ferrette Depend literally means Forest of the Pines in French. They live way up in some mountains. You wouldn't believe that it's part of Haiti because it's just a completely different climate up there and everything. But they started a clinic a few years ago. They've lived in Haiti for, I think, about 6 years now with their two kids. And the clinic and the preventative health care stuff they put in place for that community up there in Ferrette Depend is just thriving. It's taking off. Each year, it's growing by leaps and bounds. And so I think the last few years for Must Have Gifts, we have helped raise some money to give to that ministry and all that they're doing there. And they really, really appreciate it. So I hope we exceed $10,000. But that's a great investment.
And Access Health Alliance is now their name because they've sort of scaled out, haven't they?
Yeah, they started their own organization. They had been under an umbrella organization and started AHA, Access Health Alliance. They're looking to scale out not just in Ferrette Depend, but in other communities as well. Here in a minute, we'll talk about another community called Laborde, and they've helped with some preventative health care stuff there. So just really doing an exceptional job there in Haiti.
Yeah, they are just remarkable, faithful, really intelligent, capable people who are doing great work. They've scaled that work up. And so each year, we're able to give pretty generously toward them. And our goal is that we'll be able to give them this goal and hopefully even beyond that. So that's the first one. The second one is the box. And this one's the most confusing. So if you're new here, the box, that's sort of the shorthand language for our benevolence and need meeting system within the life of our church. And each year we give tens of thousands of dollars away through the box to respond again to the most urgent needs within our church and in our community. And so when we find the most urgent needs, we look to respond, and you guys give faithfully toward that throughout the course of the year. And then we're hoping to get a real boost to the box this year because we've identified a couple of families in our church, one here in our Maryville location, one in our Springbrook location, who just have an urgent need for transportation. And we would love to be able to respond by getting them a clean, reliable vehicle, And that's hard because that's very open-ended. And also, used car prices are just bonkers right now. And so, look, we set the goal at $10,000. Maybe we can do it for that. We're working on a couple things that make us think maybe we can do it for less than that. It's really sort of open-ended. So I want to be very clear and upfront about that. We have this goal that we can provide two vehicles, clean, reliable vehicles for families who would be really, really blessed by those vehicles. And they have an urgent need for them. Now, if we are able to provide them for less than than what comes in, I want to be very clear. Any money that you give toward this goal is ultimately a gift toward the box. And the box, we provide gifts and groceries and gas and housing and all sorts of needs through the box, a roof most recently, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We just respond to urgent needs. So it's a little unclear as to how this one's going to work itself out. But it's something that we specifically felt led to do and called to do. So we want to encourage you to be generous in that way as well. And the third goal here, this one's big. We are so fired up about this one. Josh, why don't you tell us about what we're working on for Laborde?
Laborde is just an incredible, very remote, isolated little village in the Central Plateau of Haiti. We've been working there for a while now. A lot of you guys are familiar with the Freedom House, which is a children's home that's transitioning into a family empowerment center that we continue to partner with. My wife's very involved with that. A lot of the kids that we originally found for the Freedom House came from Laborde. Laborde, look, I've been all over Haiti, and I've been a lot of really poor places in the world. Laborde's probably the poorest place I've ever been. It's extremely remote. You have to hike there via goat trails. There's no roads in or out. The first time I went there with a couple of Haitian buddies, all there was literally little shacks where people were living and voodoo temples, and that was it. And no churches, no schools, nothing. It continues to be incredibly poor, but we've done a lot of cool things over the years. We've done some preventative health care stuff, especially for the children, especially for pregnant women as well. We've also started a church there that now has several other simple churches, and if you've been here for a while, you've heard us talk about simple church ministries in Haiti. Several simple churches have spread out to that greater region from that church. And then also, we have started a school there where anywhere between 150 to 200 kids a year are receiving education that would never get education otherwise. But early on, we said we want to holistically come in and see the kingdom come in this place called Laborde to see total transformation. And so the third thing on must-have gifts reflects the latest step in that process. We're partnering with an organization called Lima, which has a proven track record around the world to install state-of-the-art solar panel systems that also are able to provide deep wells, I can't talk today, and there's a valley part in between the mountains where we want to put the well, but the solar panels will not only provide electricity for things like the school and the church, etc., but also will be able to power this well and provide water to the community. This could potentially provide electricity to this whole valley and the surrounding area. So it's a game changer. It can really enhance the quality of life there. I can keep talking about it, but I'm really excited about this one. And as you can see, it is a whopping goal. It's $20,000. I think we set the record for largest must-have gift ever.
Yes. Usually our goals for all of must-have gifts are around $20,000. And so this one is equal to what we typically set our annual goals to be. Now, we also typically vastly exceed the goals that we have, which is part of the reason why we said, hey, well, let's have some faith here and take a bigger swing. And I just want to reiterate what Josh already said. This one in particular, it has the capacity to dramatically change the standard of living for a huge group of people who would otherwise be completely forgotten. Obviously, the school there would be hugely blessed by this. It will provide jobs. And it will just raise the standard of living for people who just, in a very literal way, just aren't on the map. But God has put them on our map, and we as a church want to be able to respond. And so we recognize this is a huge goal. We've got faith for it. I want to encourage you to dig deep and be generous in response to that one. Let me now just point to the front page. We've been looking at the back with where each of the gifts are. As you take this home with you, hopefully you take some time to read them through and pray. And on the front, it lists a number of ways that you can give. And I just want to explain how these keywords work. So you'll see the bulleted list of ways that you can give. You can give via text. You text the dollar amount and the keyword. So if you look at those little gift tags above, the keywords are clinic, cars, and water. So if you text the dollar amount to 84321, if it's your first time giving this way, there'll be a short form to fill out, but then it's easy after that. From then on, you can give to the church. It's as easily as sending a text message. And you put in the keyword, and that will let us know how to direct the funds that you give. You can give online at vineyardchurch.us/give. You just go to our website. The give button is prominent and easy to see. And then you select the correct fund by keyword. So there's actually a drop-down menu, and you'll be looking again for clinic, cars, and water for however it is you want to direct your gifts. And then, of course, you can mail a check in at William Blunt to our address. I'm not going to run through that. And just be sure if you do that, whether you mail a check in or you write a check today or you use cash and put it in a giving envelope, just be sure to write down must-have gifts in the memo line as well as the keyword. That way we know exactly how to give. I know that's sort of boring information, but it is important for us to actually reach the goal for it to be clear about how we can give. So, guys, we're going to put an emphasis on this throughout the month of December. Guys, year after year, I'm stunned by how beautifully this church responds to the needs that are there. We've got a big challenge in front of us this year. And once again, as I said, we've got lots of faith for this. And I'm going to take a moment to pray here, and then mercifully, I'm going to get out of Josh's way and let him take it and run with it. Jesus, we love you, and I just ask that you would, Lord, just place your blessing here on this gathering that we have. This is a sacred gathering of your people. I pray your blessing on Josh as he shares, as he gives us an update and teaches from your word, God. I just ask that you would anoint him and direct him, God. Help us to listen intently. And Father, as we now consider must-have gifts together, I just ask that you would make our steps clear, that you would stir in our hearts and we would give in obedience in response to how you are leading, not under compulsion, but joyfully and cheerfully. Lord, let it be. We are grateful. Amen.
Thanks, Aaron. Hey, this is kind of a different Sunday in one way. We are going to start a sermon series on Advent as we have the last few years, and here in a few minutes I'm going to do that. I'm going to do kind of two things this morning. Three if you count the must-have gifts deal we just did, but I want to go into just giving a quick update on some other mission stuff and some stuff to really celebrate. We'll talk about that for about 5 minutes or so, and then I'm going to give, tiny homes are really popular these days. I'm going to give a tiny sermon. You're welcome. That's my Christmas gift to you. And so we'll get into the sermon here in just a few minutes. Also, I don't know if you noticed, but I busted out my Christmas lumberjack shirt. Tis the season. And I bought it where all real lumberjacks buy their shirts. You know where that's at, right? Target, actually, which I don't think is actually where lumberjacks buy their shirts. But hey, missions update. A few things. I'm not going to talk a lot about Haiti today. We just discussed a little bit about Haiti and must-have gifts. I want to talk a lot about Africa for a few minutes. But first, I mentioned I wanted to say another word about the beautifully made artisan market. Amanda wanted me to share with you guys, to date, sales for that over the last 10 years, because this is the 10th year she's done it, sales have been around she thinks about $370,000 over the last 10 years. And a huge portion of that has gone into various missions efforts around the world, especially to Freedom House, to some of our efforts in Africa. And also, a lot of that money goes to support those artists around the world that Amanda partners with. So I just wanted to, again, say thank you guys so much. And if you haven't been yet, please come this Friday and Saturday from 10 to 4 at Vienna and that following weekend as well. That really helps out going into the next year with our missions budget, okay? Also, I wanted to just share with you, and man, this is going to blow your mind. We have a map of Africa, and guess what I've got? I almost didn't have it, and Aaron saved me this morning. I have a laser pointer. From time to time, I use a laser pointer in a sermon, and it's always my favorite thing to do. I feel like I have a lot of additional power. Before I go through this, if you go to this church for a while now, you know, we are part of, we actually helped start the Côte d'Ivoire or the Ivory Coast partnership for the Vineyard, as in the Vineyard International. There was no vineyard work happening in Ivory Coast, and God used our church to really help catalyze that. That was about 6-7 years ago. I want to give you a real quick history and then bring you up to date on where we're at with that, because it's really exciting. As our family was actually leaving Haiti, God really started to get me thinking about unreached people groups. If you've heard of the 1040 window, it's the strip of the world that kind of goes from West Africa all the way through parts of East Asia, where literally thousands of unreached people groups are. And when I say unreached people groups, that means at least 98% of the people in that people group are not Christian, and a lot of them are not just unreached, but they're unengaged, meaning that not only are hardly anybody Christian, but nobody is making an effort to go and share the gospel of Jesus with folks. And so God really started to put unreached people groups on my heart. I started praying about it. We started looking at Africa, and that vision got narrowed to Ivory Coast or Côte d'Ivoire as a very strategic place to start, basically in the west of Africa. And this is Côte d'Ivoire right here, but start in the west of Africa and go to the north and east. That was the plan, because there are literally hundreds of unreached people groups throughout that section there. We started with a people group called the Worodugu people, and so you've probably heard me use that before. You could go to a website called the Joshua Project, and they really highlight a lot of unreached people groups. Worodugu is one of the people groups in that. There are a couple hundred thousand people, and today we can say that they are no longer truly an unreached people group, because about 6 years ago, God used our church, and we started partnering with some other churches to raise up indigenous missionaries, train them, walk with them in relationship, resource them, all kinds of strategic ways of partnering with folks in that region, and we launched a disciple-making movement. And I don't have a lot of time to tell you all about what that is, but it's basically a Jesus strategy for making disciples. It looks a lot like the early church. And so we started with the Worodugu. We put a five-year plan in place, a five-year exit strategy. And we said, at the end of that 5 years, we want to see the work that's happening there be self-propagating. In other words, church or disciples being made from disciples in that people group, not Americans or Europeans or whatever coming to that people group and continuing to get one person saved and get the next person saved. And I'm not saying there's anything necessarily wrong with that strategy, but we wanted to see movement catalyzed from African indigenous leaders, okay? And so we started doing that. We said we want it to be self-propagating, so multiplying from itself. We said we wanted it to be self-governing, so local leadership rising up and taking taking authority and control of their situation there. And we said we wanted it to be self-sustaining, meaning that at the end of 5 years, we didn't want money from the United States to continue to have to help fund the work that was happening there, but from sustainable business projects, from local tithes and offerings, from churches that start when disciples are made, we wanted it to be self-sustaining. So self-propagating, self-sustaining, self-governing. Guys, December, at the end of this month, will be the end of that 5 years, and I'm very happy to say that we will have achieved all three of those things. We will see complete self-sustain, that movement being completely self-sustaining, completely self-governed with local leadership, and it is continuing to multiply. It is to now the 13th generation of disciples that have been made in that area. Literally thousands, and I'm not making this up, thousands of people who are Muslim background are now calling themselves disciples of Jesus. It's unbelievable what's happening. And from that, we started working with two other unreached people groups. We started partnering with some other Vineyard churches to help start that work so that not all the money was having to come out of our church, because it's expensive to launch disciple-making movements and unreached people groups. And that work is now going, and it has bled over into a couple of other unreached people groups. So now there are six unreached people groups in the Ivory Coast that are being engaged in this work. Now, here's the last thing I want to say about that. Our goal, as I told you, was to start in the Ivory Coast and to work our way north and east. And we have, as of the last few months, just officially launched work with two unreached people groups in the country of Mali, just to the north. So now the first of those was catalyzed from some of our missionaries, some of our indigenous missionaries who were Ivoirian, going up and starting the work in Mali. The other was when we identified a guy named Sidibe and his leadership team, and gave him the vision, started working with him, and he is launching work with a second unreached people group in Mali. So the vision is coming to reality. Now we can say there are six unreached people groups. And I just want to bless you guys, because from your all's giving and praying in this process, eight unreached people groups are now being engaged that weren't being engaged. That's unbelievable. Right? And we just give God praise and glory. Look at some pictures of what's happening in Mali. This is just the last couple of months, and we can go through these kind of quickly. People are coming to Jesus at a more rapid rate than I could ever see coming. It's unbelievable what's happening. You can see several folks here being baptized. This is one of the villages where work has started. We can just go through those kind of quickly here. I just got these pictures about a month ago. I'll be going to Mali, just to Bamako, and I'm kind of keeping that under the radar because Mali starts to get a little more dangerous than the Ivory Coast, especially if you start going into the north. But we're just really excited to see what God is doing there. So I wanted to share those things with you. Thank you guys for your generosity, bring you up to date. If you have more questions about mission stuff, I know that I didn't even highlight half of what you probably are wondering about this whole thing. But I'd love to answer your questions, and I'd love to also get you involved in how to pray, how to specifically and intentionally pray for the work that's happening there. So we say thank you, Jesus, for what he's doing. And then finally, I just want to go into a short, like I said, a tiny sermon, if you will. We're starting our Advent series, and Advent, if you don't know what Advent is, a lot of churches here in the Southeast especially don't really use the church calendar, but the Advent is the start of the church calendar for many churches around the world. We are literally, as we sit here today, celebrating Advent with thousands of people across the planet. Advent is where we meditate on not only the first coming of Jesus, but also the fact we believe that he is coming again. And so the first and second coming of Jesus. And we, of course, highlight a lot of things about the coming of Jesus during Christmas. But we don't often think about the fact that Christians believe that he's also coming again. And we're going to look through the sermon series at four words. And this is a tradition across a lot of churches. But four words to kind of highlight the Advent season. And those words are hope, love, joy, and peace. And so I got tasked with the word hope. And I'm excited about that because it's a good word. I want to look at Luke chapter 1, starting in verse 26, and just briefly talk about the concept of hope. You guys are probably familiar with this story. It says, in the sixth month of Elizabeth's pregnancy, God sent the angel Gabriel to Nazareth, a village in Galilee, to a virgin named Mary. She was engaged to be married to a man named Joseph, a descendant of King David. Gabriel appeared to her and said, "Greetings, favored woman. The Lord is with you." Confused and disturbed, Mary tried to think what the angel could mean. "Don't be afraid, Mary," the angel told her, "for you have found favor with God. You will conceive and give birth to a son, and you will name him Jesus. He will be very great and will be called the Son of the Most High. The Lord God will give him the throne of his ancestor David, and he will reign over Israel forever. His kingdom will never end." Mary asked the angel, "But how can this happen? I'm a virgin." The angel replied, "The Holy Spirit will come upon you, and the power of the Most High will overshadow you. So the baby to be born will be holy, and he will be called the Son of God. What's more, your relative Elizabeth has become pregnant in her old age. People used to say she was barren, but she has conceived a son, and now in her she has conceived a son and is now in her sixth month. For the word of the Lord will never fail." Mary responded, "I am the Lord's servant. May everything you have said about me come true." And then the angel left her. It's a beautiful story. You know, a lot of people speculate how old Mary might have been. Life expectancy back in those days was a lot less, so people got married a lot younger. I mean, Mary truly could have been as young as 12 years old, but very likely was not older than a teenager. So somewhere between 12 and 18, probably around 14, 15, 16, when this angel comes, and I mean, he delivers a whopper of a message, right? This vision that Mary had must have seemed both delusional and preposterous. And, you know, delusional because she was seeing an angel, for crying out loud. I mean, I don't imagine you just see that kind of thing every day. And this is probably the first time Mary had experienced anything like that. So delusional because she saw an angel, and preposterous because of the content of the message. I mean, it was a heck of a message that Gabriel gave her. He said a lot of stuff, but three things really stood out to me. He said, number one, she would give birth despite being a virgin. That's not normal. Number two, the baby would be God's. Again, not normal. And number three, that this baby would be a king whose kingdom would never end. That's three really big things. I mean, when you really step back, we've heard this story so many times that we become numb to it, but when you step back and think, like, what if that happened today to a young girl, you know, that went to, like, Alcoa High School or Maryville High School or even middle school, and, you know, all of a sudden she starts to get the baby bump, and her buddies are like, "Oh, you know, whose baby is that?" And she's like, "You're not going to believe it," you know. No, really, whose baby? It's God's. I mean, we put people like that in certain types of, you know, facilities, right? But can you imagine what it would have been like for Mary? It would be crazy if that happened here today. But she lived in a really, really small rural society where everybody knew everybody. I mean, this just would have been so hard for this young girl. This teenage girl believed the unbelievable, and she hoped for the promises of God. And I mean, we can't make light of just how much faith that must have taken. So we're talking about hope here. You know, hope is kind of hard to come by these days. We live in a pretty cynical society. We live in a culture that's prone to say this, and you've heard this a million times, right? Don't get your hopes up. You hear that, I feel like, almost on a daily basis. And that, you know, don't get your hopes up, meaning haven't you lived long enough to realize that you're probably going to be let down, right? The way that we say it a lot of times in the Southeast is bless your heart, right? That's our pseudo-kind way of saying it. Don't get your hopes, don't let your hopes down. Don't get your hopes down, or don't give your hopes up. And not so with God. His promises are unbreakable. The Bible says over and over again that his love endures forever. But maybe this season for a lot of us, and I would say this is a lot of folks in the room, it's, you know, it's hard to believe that we can have hope. Maybe we've become pretty cynical with all that's going on around us, with the political climate and with the climates in our family and all the kind of stuff. It's pretty hard to have hope a lot of times. And maybe you've hoped for something in a relationship for a long time and you wonder if it's worth it anymore. Maybe you've been ill or wrestled with a condition of some sort for months or even years and hope is fading. Maybe life is just so stinking heavy right now and it's pretty hard to hold on to the promises of God. And I think that would be true for a lot of folks in the room. You know, it's important to hope for things, and especially good things. It's important to hope for healing and restoration and for salvation. I mean, these are great things to hope for, but it's better to rest in hope. And that's what I want to talk about for just a minute here. It's better to rest in hope. We can hope for things or we can rest in hope. And when I say rest in hope, it's altogether different than just hoping for things. Why? Because the Bible makes it pretty clear that God is our hope. God is our hope. Things, people, circumstances, everything, it all comes and goes. It's all transient. But God is constant. He's constant. He's never changing. So listen to this verse in the book of Hebrews. Hebrews 10:23, the writer says this. Let us hold tightly without wavering to the hope we affirm, for God can be trusted to keep his promise. And I want to just briefly break that verse down in just a second, but this verse, and let me just read it again. Let us hold tightly without wavering to the hope we affirm, for God can be trusted to keep his promise. This verse begs the question, what is hope in the most primal sense of the word? And I don't know about you guys, but I would argue that hope is the desire for the most longed for outcome. You know, you can hope and want a lot of things, but true hope is hoping for the most, longing for the most longed for outcome. The pinnacle of what it is we want to see happen, right? So what if everything we love and long for in life, in everything, the most longed for result was God? Now, I know that sounds a little bit simplistic, but let's just think about it for a second. When you're thinking about a difficult relationship, say it's your marriage, what if the pinnacle of what you want to see happen in your marriage is truly seeing God show up? If God was the thing hoped for in the marriage, not restoration, that's a good thing. We want to see that happen. Not being able to talk to each other, that's a good thing. We want to be able to communicate in our marriages. But what if God himself was the pinnacle of what you wanted to see happen in your marriage? I know that sounds a little strange, but have you ever thought about that? What if God was the end all that you want to, that you're hoping for? And not just in your marriage, but in the lives of your children. We all, you know, if you've got kids in the room, you want to see things for your kids. You hope for things for your kids. What if the thing most hoped for was God himself? God showing up. God being manifested in the lives of your kids. What if God was the thing we most wanted to see in our old age, because we're all heading that direction. Newsflash. And we wonder what it's going to look like. What is retirement going to look like? How am I going to medically be able to sustain, you know, because it gets expensive, all this stuff. And we hope for things, and more than hope, we worry about things. But what if God in our old age was what was hoped for? God in our marriages, God in our children, God in our careers. Man, if God is the ultimate thing we're hoping for in our careers, it shakes up the way that we view our work life. God in our marriages, God in our children, God in our careers, God in our old age, God in everything as the most hoped for, longed for thing. So look at the verse again. Let us hold tightly without wavering to the hope we affirm, for God can be trusted to keep his promise. We don't hold tightly to the promises in this verse. We don't hold tightly to the outcomes that we desire. This verse says we are to hold tightly to hope itself, which is God. And when Jesus came to planet Earth, it was hope coming. And when the Bible says that he'll come again, it is hope. It is the promise of God himself come, made manifest in our midst. It is the ultimate thing to hope for, and God delivered. We don't hold tightly to the promises or to the outcomes that we desire. We hold tightly to hope itself, which is Jesus. Why? Because we can only hope for what we think is best, but Jesus knows what's best. His perspective is bigger, it's clearer, and it's free from our biases and our skewed worldviews. So we can hope in all kinds of things, but if our ultimate hope is in God himself, we're on the right track. And maybe you're hoping for a lot of things this season, and that's great. But let your hopes and your dreams be filtered through the one great hope, which is Jesus, which is that baby in a manger made manifest among us. And hold tightly onto that hope, which will never, ever fail you. A couple of verses here as we wind up. Eugene Peterson, one of my favorite authors and pastors, who passed away not long ago, he had a beautiful thing he said about hope. He said, "Hoping is not dreaming. It is not spinning an illusion or fantasy to protect us from our boredom or our pain. It means a confident, alert expectation that God will do what he said he will do. It is imagination put in the harness of faith." I love that last line. It's imagination put in the harness of faith. Not a dream or a fantasy. If our hope is in God himself, then we can have confidence. And then N.T. Wright said something really beautiful as well. N.T. Wright said, "True worship is open to God, adoring God, waiting for God, and listen, trusting God even in the dark." When we're hoping for things and when we can't see the outcome, that's really, really hard. But if our hope is in God, even in the dark, then the uncertainty all around us is a little easier to cope with. So I want to share a story as we wind this up, my tiny sermon. And this story comes out of West Africa. I heard about it through an organization called The Hunger Project. It happened a few decades ago, actually. But the story goes like this. The Hunger Project was going to go there was to the far east of the country of Senegal, which is in the far west of Africa, not too far from where we've got some work going on, right on the Sahara Desert, right? A brutal climate in this particular village that the Hunger Project was going to go to. And there was even more extreme famine than normal. And there were reports of people dying, of extreme malnutrition. And so the Hunger Project went there to see how they could alleviate some of these concerns. And when they got there, they saw people that were utterly emaciated. It was horrible. It looked like a nightmare. And yet, as they started talking with people, and this is a Muslim village, as they started talking with people in this very patriarchal society, they started having access to interviewing some of the women. And they would talk to one woman after another that each said a version of the exact same thing, that they had had a vision or a dream. They had both of those. They had daydreams or visions while they were awake and visions or dreams while they were sleeping, of a lake underneath the desert. And one woman after another claimed to have this vision. And so Anyway, long story short, some of the people from the Hunger Project went to some of the men and they said, hey, I know this is crazy, but would you just maybe let the women try to dig? Just see what happens. And the men were like, they just turned their nose up at the women. Silly women. They don't know what they're talking about. We've heard them talk about that before, too. They're crazy. Don't listen to them. And finally, over the course of a few weeks, they broke down a little bit and they said, okay, no problem. Sure, the ladies can dig. Let them dig. And so the ladies started digging. They would take turns taking care of their kids, and they would go out sometimes by hand even, and if they could find some kind of tool, and they would dig in the middle of the desert, a fool's errand. And they dug for a couple of days, which turned into a couple of weeks, and each day the men would laugh at them. And those couple of weeks turned into a couple of months, which turned into 6 months. And right at about a year, they struck water, and there was truly an underground lake underneath this village. And you know what happened? Not only did it change the landscape of that village, but 16 surrounding villages got access to water, and an irrigation system was put in. And I mean, it totally transformed the whole landscape. And why do I tell that story? There is this undercurrent in all of our lives of God working in ways that we can't see or possibly understand, and it would blow our minds like it blew Mary's mind, this crazy, preposterous message that she got. And yet he is at work underneath the surface in every life in this room. He is the thing to be hoped for because he is incredibly interested in the course of your life. And we can put hope in all the things that we want to see happen. Or we can put hope in the source of life that's always under the surface and at any point can bubble forth. Our hope is in God, not in the things of this world. And this Advent season, we celebrate hope, which came in a very strange way. Little baby in a barn. Who does it like that? Sounds like an underground lake kind of story to me. I'm going to ask the band to come on up, and we're going to go into a time of Selah, and then we'll do communion shortly after that. Hey, look, you might have come in here today feeling a bit hopeless, feeling like the weight of the world is on your shoulders, and your family just can't get their heads above water, or whatever the case may be. And we got to be concerned about things, because that's life. But if the primary place we are placing our eyes is on the source of hope, I would say even hope itself, which is Jesus, then we don't have to have everything figured out. Anxiety levels can truly go down when we allow the burdens that are crushing us to be placed on the shoulders of the one who can carry them. So I want to pray for us for just a minute, and then we'll be quiet and just reflect and just let the Lord speak to you however he would like to in this moment. God, I thank you very much that you are our hope. This world so often really does seem hopeless. I mean, it's kind of cliche to say that, but it's true. I mean, there are whole seasons of life that just seem really hopeless. But we're people of Jesus. The folks in this room have gathered today in your name, Lord, believing that underneath it all, there is an inexpressible in human words, hope. That is our foundation, and we stand on that hope today. And I speak that over the people in this room today, that there is hope in the middle of darkness, and we don't have to grope about lost, wondering where we're going. You are our hope, and we claim that today. That is our victory. So I pray for the people in this room that they would live in that hope this week, this Advent season, and going forward. Help us to fix our eyes on you, the author and finisher of our faith. So as we're quiet before you for a couple of moments, Lord, would you just speak to hearts in the room? I pray that you would download some hope in those hearts.